because of his awesome memory. He said that you did a lot of talking about this and that, about our background. Did you go into the symbols and how we did them?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I mentioned, right from the beginning of the symbols coming.
Yeah, because I always listen, JW tells me where the good stuff is, so I'll go to that particular hour, but I always start off, before I go to where he sent me, I listen to the beginning to see the awkwardness, how the beginning begins, and so I heard you and Tina talking, and you said that the Evergreens start in 76. Remember, they start in 74, and they go 30 years.
Oh, did I say 76? Okay, I meant 74.
Yeah, and they go 30 years to 2004. Okay, so that's the 30 years, 74 to 2004, okay. Just if you ever have to say it ever again in the universe. And there was another date or something that you had off. Was it about Worcester or?
Yeah, I didn't know Ralph Doobie. I wasn't sure of the year.
Yeah, Ralph Doobie starts in Thanksgiving. That'd be November, American Thanksgiving, November 62. He had cancer, and it's a month after the October Missile Crisis. And his fellow CIA psychologist, Stan somebody, I got it in my notes, hypnotized him to see if that could help him heal his cancer, whatever the guy was going to do. It was him and Lucille Raymond. They were friends and CIA people. They hypnotized him, and awareness came through in the course of the hypnosis. And that's how it began. So that's 62. And he died in early 67, so he just went over 4 years. And then Worcester comes in the summer of 67 and goes publicly till about 74, 75.
Okay.
All right, so what's amazing is the Evergreens start in August 74, and Carol and I and another guy went to the what was called the August Affair in Seattle in August 74. That's when Worcester was sabotaged by the Paul Shockley guys. Somebody threw a glass down and broke it in the middle of the Cosmic War in a session with Dave, and it froze his spine or something, caused aggravation for many years. Then it moved, Avaton moved it down to Paul Shockley in 75, 76. So Worcester basically stopped in August 74 and limped out of it, and the Evergreen started in August 74. That's what's really interesting.
Yeah.
And in my mind, for years, it was like it slipped out of analog cosmic awareness into digital android meme Evergreens.
Yeah.
And then how long was the gap between when the Evergreens stopped coming through and then Ion started?
From 2004 until...
Yeah, late 2004. I mean, I was trying to get him to do it at the McClellan Festival in the middle of October 2004. That's when Michael decided not to do that. I was trying to get him to do it on a day that he never did. Monday was his day off. And that pushed him into not doing me or anybody. So that, and he canceled everything from like the end of October. They were booked up till January. So that was that. Then Ion shows up technically in March 2009. But in the fall of 2008, JW suddenly had all these ideas coming through him. And he was calling us up saying, I got to start writing books. I got all this stuff. It's coming through my head. I don't know where it's coming from, but I want to get it down. So we were trying to figure out how to do this. So there were options to get someone to dictate it to, and they just type it out. And Carolyn offered, but then it didn't really fit her whatever. So we were going to get someone else. And then JW never did any. He never called the person we got to do it. And it just lingered around. But then that's when he starts seeing stop parallel worlds through the window, and then he saw dead people in early 2009. But in retrospect, obviously he was starting to have Ion come through him, and he thought it was his own mind wanting to have thoughts get out of it. That's something I've not talked about too much. So it's actually, he probably started 4 years right after Evergreen stopped, 4 years to the day kind of thing. Even though Ion says it was lurking around JW and me and Carolyn for about a year before, and it was, I don't know when it made the decision, but it was, I said, was Ion ever looking at anybody else to do it with? He said, yeah, there was a few people, you know, on the short list, but in the end, they went with JW for some reason. We can understand why, you know. Obviously, Carolyn and I were the best qualified to keep the questioning going in the early years,
So, Bob,
is that Angela listening? Is that Angela laughing?
Yeah.
But you get what I mean. I mean, whoever they picked, there was no more perfect situation than, in retrospect to the projects that are happening since then, which we didn't know at the beginning, it all fits to here, and us being here and our background, you couldn't have, you know, it was rigged for JW to, quote, win because he had good backup.
Yeah,
because of you guys, because it was the triad.
When did you start going around on radio shows talking about the end of the Android meme or the post-Android meme phase?
In the beginning of the Bush administration, because obviously once Bush started showing up, what really triggered me on him was when he did the debate, and I don't even know if I looked at it. I never watched any of that stuff, but I would hear about it because it would be in the news. And what struck me, and then maybe I later saw the footage, is that in the debate in the fall of 2000 with Gore, who was Mr. Internet, Mr. Slick Information Guy, while Gore was pontificating, Bush was there winking at the audience.
Yeah.
Nonverbal, just saying, what's with all this information crap? And I realized he was post-Information Society guy, and then he comes out and it's more, I mean, I might have found out during the campaign if I studied it, but eventually I hear in 2001 that he didn't read the newspaper, didn't watch TV, he wasn't engaged in information things, so it confirmed what I intuited in the debate. So then I said, yeah, it's post-information, post-Android meme. I'd already been saying that the Android meme on the chart in mid-90s goes from 60 to 90, then you have the afterimage of the Android meme, that limps to 2000, and I used to say somewhere in those early charts from 1990 to 2020 is lockdown Bob Rule. So I had myself being taken over in 1990, and that's when the afterimage of the Android meme happens, and you have the McLuhan revival, plus Nelson's album and the various thing I was doing. That was afterimage of the period up to 1990. So we had the Bob zone from all through 1990. But then that becomes obvious with Bush. We're definitely in the Bob zone from 2001 on, and whatever I did during those years was appropriate until Ion showed up.
Yeah. And so you're running around after the Bush administration started talking about we're in post-information, and then you've got the evergreens.
Yeah, here's the thing. Okay, so we're in the Bush world. There's nothing to say. It's lockdown Bob Rule. I've arrived at City Island, and this new movie, you got to see it. The City Island movie is incredible for the ionic embed and everything. But so I'm at City Island. I'm on a separate little world, which is like a mini Maui. I'm just off the coast of Manhattan, the headquarters of the Android meme. So I'm operating from a new level of slack in relation to Manhattan all through, 2000s. But as things unfolded, I was at 44 Fordham Street. McLuhan had done the conference at Fordham University and other stuff. 44 was all over the place in 2001. And then when Bin Laden, did his thing in 2001, he was 44. His weird psycho guru was 44. That confirmed the 44 where I was. So I knew that I'd done that, indirectly. And so I started to get confirmed that it was my period with the 44 showing up everywhere. So that went, I just coasted along waiting to see what would happen. I don't know what I did. And then I did the thing with Nelson, and that collapsed pretty quickly. That obviously wasn't useful. And that was in 2002.
You mean Cloak and Dagger, right?
Yeah. Mojo Radio. And then somewhere after that, I started doing the stuff with Scott, who Angela is the person sitting here with us. And that was Bob cleaning up his estate. See, McLuhan said that T.S. Eliot in his final years was just busy cleaning up his estate, republishing old manuscripts or unpublished stuff, just the final publication. Well, I spent that time going through all the Android meme phase information and talking about the Post-Information Society in those interviews, I'm pretty sure, right, Scott? I'm sure I was talking about it by that time. Also, it was being published in Flipside. Okay, so we go along for a few years, and then we end up here in Paradise, and then the floodgates opened. They waited till we got here.
Hey, did you know the release date of Civilization Phase 3 is April 4th, 1995? So that's 4-4, April 4th.
Right, and then 14, and then you put 4 and 4 is 8, and 9... What'd she say? Now, Angela, you translate Angela. We can't be distracted by it, but I'm interested what she's saying. What did she say?
Sorry, she blurted out something unrelated. Go ahead.
No, but you can say it.
Poker.
Sorry, she's playing poker on the computer over there, and she just blurted something out.
Oh, it's not relevant to us. Okay. So, 95 is 14. 95 is 14. 4-4 is 8. 22. And then you add the 19, which is 1, 9, 10, is 1, you get the 122. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Civilization Phase 3, April 4th, 95. That is the very week where Nelson pissed off Eric McLuhan and Corinne McLuhan. And I called up Corinne around her birthday, April 12th, and got talking to her and said I was going to the Evergreens. Did you want to talk to Marshall? And I found out. Okay, so I said I was going to Toronto. I could even look up the dates of the readings and know that it was around that time. That's right, I know in April 95 I did this first or second panel. Anyways, I hadn't talked to her.
Are you recording yet?
No. I hadn't talked to Mrs. McLuhan since 1981, so it's 14 years later. And a lot has happened since then. So I just called up the blue. She remembered me. And I said, you know how you talked to me about Marshall speaking to you in the kitchen after he died and all that? She goes, yeah. And I said, well, I'm going to the Evergreens. Would you like to have any message or anything from Marshall or to Marshall? She thinks about it. She says, no, I have nothing to say. Now, we knew that she had fallen in love with some other guy, and a rich hotel guy. And they almost got married, and she told somebody who told me that she said, Marshall, what was it? Marshall never really loved me, or I never had love with Marshall because he was too busy doing his work, something like that. Anyways, the marriage didn't work, so Marshall probably sabotaged that, or it never happened. So she's saying she doesn't want to talk to him, no big deal. And then we get talking, and she says, you know, I know the Evergreens. I actually had a session with them. Michael, that would be the youngest son, took me to the Evergreens, years ago. And she said, I still get their newsletter. And it's funny, all those years, Mike and Ellie knew I was talking to McLuhan, never said that. They were very good on confidentiality. They never mentioned Corinne. So she did that. So then I'm talking to Mary a lot the last couple of years, and Mary's going through her stuff about a year ago, and she finds an old Evergreens reading with her mother from 1976, when Marshall's still alive.
Oh.
That's quite a find. You know, and in it, it's Mrs. McLuhan and maybe Michael, like she said, but it's not mid-80s. It's, 10 years before. And they go through every member of the family, getting a psycho profile of them. So... Mary is tempted to give me a copy, but I don't press it since it's personal. But there was the proof right there. She didn't even know Mary. Mary didn't know what it was. Mary didn't know anything about the Evergreens. But she just was looking through and found this weird thing, the Evergreens, and asked me what it could be. And then I told her all that I've just told you. And Marshall was not there. We don't know if Marshall knew about it. But that's pretty incredible that Marshall was that close to the Evergreens.
Yeah. Now, did he go to mediums? Is it a medium?
Not that I know of, but one time I was talking to him about eating a lot of bananas, living on bananas, and he said, well, Edgar Cayce says that's not good. So he quoted Edgar Cayce to me.
Oh.
That's pretty what people would expect from a Catholic.
Well, he was a conscious medium. He was a conscious medium in a way. But very, but he distinguished himself from all the other mediums like Worcester and all the other guys.
Yeah, which we're trying to get at in the Andrew Crystal series.
Yeah,
we're trying to figure out what that is.
Because the litany of people who were channeling were all channeling astral stuff, metaphysical astral kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, they weren't channeling pure non-physical, which is what Ion first defined itself. Pure non-physical source energy was the
first. Apart from Ion, I'm just saying Marshall distinguished himself from everyone else because he was a conscious channel.
Well, that's what we're trying. It's not that simple to say that, but that's what we're talking about. Have you listened to them, Chad? The ongoing thing I'm doing with Andrew Crystal.
I listened to the first one.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out what is conscious mediumship. You know, what's the difference between McLuhan and Worster and everybody? Yeah, so it's not that simple. We're now into environmental conscious mediumship.
Yeah.
The Android meme doing
because
it.
The whole idea of a spiritual medium or channeler has different connotations given whatever environment people have been in through history.
That's right. Yeah, and so what? That great letter that Andrew found for that first session was incredible. There was McLuhan at least using the words cosmic and that stuff, so he knew that language. But what's the other thing? I knocked it out of my head.
Of course, Ion now has obliterated the word conscious as having any meaning anyway.
Yeah, consciousness is gone. Oh, yeah. Here's the thing that I bring in somewhere's in there in session interview dialogue one or two. When I found the manuscript for Understanding Media, you know, the original manuscript, the little letter introducing it, he said, this book treats speech, this is something like this sentence, treats speech as archetypal, or speech as archetype. That's really interesting because that implies where Ion says that Marshall, knowing that words create a... their own reality, that secret wisdom. He knew that personally, but he did not apply it to the world of languages and media. And so when he says speech is archetypal, it could refer to what Ion's saying, that your words create your reality, or it could be in the realm of language. But that's an important statement. The book deals with the position that speech is archetypal.
But speech goes through the cycles of cliché to archetype, so it's cliché, it's archetypal, and everything in between.
Well, it goes, you know, speech was the first, when it first showed up, last word. Then it becomes cliché, then it becomes art form, then it becomes archetypal. It becomes art form with the alphabet, because it's the content of writing, and then it becomes archetypal with either the printing press or electric media. But if you say it's...
Yeah, but then it starts... starts going through its rapid cycles after that.
Not cycles. It gets changed by the printing press. It gets changed by telegraph and then movie and TV. So it changes how people speak.
Yeah, but it's
wrong.
It was archetypal.
The archetype process, doesn't that repeat with every new environment? Doesn't it repeat within it? Don't we see
those
shifts?
Last word to... cliche to art form to archetype. That's the way he lays out in the 60s. Now, as he gets speeded up in the art in the Android meme phase, that's when it goes bypasses the last word art form thing. It just goes cliche archetype, and that's
right.
Why my chart is holeopathic cliche archetypes. That's it. It's diminished that in the replay of the Android meme, but not in the analog phase. It's slower. So basically, speech becomes archetypal during the analog electric era. Because speech is art form with the printed book, then it becomes archetype because the book becomes art form in the electric age. So speech moves up the ladder to archetype. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Then after World War II, the end of history, the interplay of all the media and the global theater start going through that rapid cliché archetype flipping. And McLuhan defined consciousness as the cliché archetype process.
So when Ion obliterates the concept of consciousness, is he saying that the cliché archetype process is also rendered moot in this new situation?
Yeah, if you notice, last week when I read these quotes from Ben Watson, useful statement words, I said architected structure, and he says archetypal, describing Ion. He changed it to archetypal. So he does talk about the cliché archetype thing, but the words of Ion are either 19th century awareness or something different. Because it's the machines that become cliche archetype after World War II and speeches and got a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ion recovers the true mystery meaning of speech. So he can say, depending on what McLuhan means by speech becoming archetypal, Ion moves it into the mystery landscape. See, that would be...
Well, he's on, I didn't hear the third hour of last Wednesday, but in the second hour, he's starting to get a glimmer of what you're talking about, Bob. He was talking about the merging of the...
The bodies. You know, everything Ion says is, you know, adaptable to what I said. No, that's true. I mean, 6 months into Ion, he said, you know, Bob, this is a private session. He said, we've decided that your five-body model is useful, and we're going to adopt it. He announced that to me. I don't know what consideration they went through, because there was a general not allowing McLuhan to be discussed in the first 6 months.
And yeah, you know, I saw that as being... I saw that as being a... he was sort of... It was too... The new people who were coming in to listen to Ion were so incredulous about all the McLuhan stuff, and they didn't want to hear it, and they thought that you were an asshole. And he was kind of protecting his brood. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, that might be part of it. The other thing was he would say to me, if I ever mention McLuhan, he'd go, yes, McLuhan, but you got to say, however... So I have to say, however, Bob takes it, blah, 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 and goes further. He really, and he was right, he had to make the point beyond McLuhan before he would concede on McLuhan. He didn't want me to stay with McLuhan, you know what I mean, and refer back to McLuhan. So he was adamant at the beginning, no, we're not having McLuhan until you get what we're saying. And so eventually I guess I got it, and then he conceded the five-body model, and then that allowed McLuhan in. So personally, Ion says that we as in the Ion phenomenon are completing James Joyce, Finney's Wake, and Zappa environmentally in huge levels. What did I say? Finney's Wake, McLuhan, and Zappa. So we're going past all of them and realizing it. They never had Ion to work with, but they were groping towards it. So they're not relevant, so to speak, to what's happening now. But you'll notice McLuhan more freely will mention McLuhan or Finnegan's Wake in the weekend talk on the radio, just to keep people going through the chart, so to speak, you know, before they get to where we are. And that's
you
all.
Mean,
the
Ion, Ion mentions McLuhan. You said McLuhan mentions McLuhan. You mean Ion does, right?
Yeah, sorry, Ion. Every show he says, as McLuhan would say, as McLuhan would not tell you.
Right.
No, unlike Marshall McLuhan, we're not trying to tell you something.
He'll do it that way, and then another time, unlike Marshall McLuhan, we're going to tell you something. He plays both sides of McLuhan,
right,
which
he,
is accurate.
He both includes and excludes McLuhan.
He flips the phatic and the emphatic. He goes back and forth depending on what the situation is. If someone's being too emphatic, he'll go like McLuhan, we're not trying to tell you anything. If someone's being too phatic, he'll then go the other way and say, unlike McLuhan, we're being emphatic. We're trying to tell you something. He plays it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to listen to a lot of it to catch it. You may not catch it on cash flow, but I catch it in private readings, and, you know, I hear it so much, I catch these flippings.
And is he starting to like Zappa at all?
No.
He
has no problem.
Ion explained, though. Ion said Zappa's crap. That's because that's what Zappa was saying about his own music. So he's just repeating Zappa's intention.
Have you heard that Zappa last week set the trophy, the statue thing, Scott?
No.
Okay, last 19th, they set up a statue in Baltimore. So that night, I went on all Slack and said, well, me and Frank over here going to talk about it tonight. And they said, you're a fucking idiot. It's all fantasy, blah, blah, blah. So then a little later, I get Frank on the line, and we do this long thing, and there's so much libelous or slander stuff in there about Gale and Moon that I have to delete it all, but the basic point he makes, Chad citing, he said Frank himself was unsatisfied, set a very high standard, and I said, yeah, but his fans didn't think that, and he says, no, we're not talking about his fans, we're talking about Frank, and how he was very frustrated, and we agree with his frustration or acknowledge it. Now, that could be, I don't know how much of a bias Ion has that, or he's just saying...
Well, that kind of came... They sort of pointed that out in the... Was it the CBC radio documentary on Zappa?
Yeah.
It was. It sort of became clear that he couldn't... He what he heard in his head, he couldn't make it real in acoustic space.
Yeah, and he said that way back in the 60s, 70s. He said, in my dreams, I got all this great music, but I can't make it happen. And he was driven. Now, here's the thing. Ion's talking about overall Iondome is a new song. And so it's not in the audio you hear of that thing with Frank, but somewhere in there in other places he says, we are creating the new song, which is what McLuhan, Zappa, and Joyce aspired to. They didn't get to it. So Frank was working towards it, tried to get the new song and make it environmental, and he didn't get there, and that's what he was frustrated about.
You don't think Joyce got there?
Always staying ahead of the technology.
That's right, and he was ready to become president and implement cold fusion if it was real. He was interested in Pons and Fleischmann, called them up at the time, 1990, and that's right when he was talking about being president.
Back in Zappa's days, to create an album like Civilization Phase 3, no one else could have done that using the technology they had. But now, just about anyone could do something similar today using the technology that is available, like just on a Mac.
I know. I mean, that's why he died in 93. They all died in 93. Garrett, Jodun Sloan, Bukowski, Zappa, Sun Ra. I mean, Sun Ra was the black Zappa. And they all went out in 93, which was the beginning of the moving in the afterimage of the Android meme, which is everybody could make anything and creativity was obsolete. You know,
right.
They were the last great artists.
Yeah, or maybe they moved on to a larger dimension that was, didn't include having a token meat sack.
Yeah. The... And every one of those deaths had interesting synchronicity with me and Carolyn, which is so it was quite a year. That's why my early charts, I'd say 77, the Android meme, Croker quadrant was 77 to, no, Dobbs quadrant was 77 to 92. Sometimes I'd say 93, sometimes I'd say 90. I'd play with it. But definitely if I said 93, I was thinking of those guys all going. And they're all part of what Ion is. The D cell is a big part of Ion. And Jodun Sloan goes in February. Oh, yeah, I forgot Garrett. Sun Ra goes on the end of May. So then Garrett is in November, 1st of November. Zappa is a month later, 1st of December. And Bukowski dies. He's dying all through 93 and dies in early 94. And there might be, and Walter Fishman, the guy who did Mirror, died in August 93. It's like, as soon as I walked in the States, everybody fucking started dropped off. Bob had arrived. It was okay. We could leave.
And you used to talk about how you were killing off all those people on the radio.
What'd you say?
You used to talk about how you were killing them all off on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, they all started going 18 months after I interacted with them. Zappa went about 18 months later. Ginsberg did. I saw him in New York. He was gone. Burroughs did. I was just offing them. And this is what's uncanny about Ion. He may be getting these thoughts from me. I don't know. But Ion has joked every now and then. He says, Bob, you killed everybody off. You killed off Cosmic Wares, the Evergreens, the Abrahams. He doesn't say Zappa McClone, but I'll add that. I'll go Zappa McClone. He goes, yep, that's right. And he'll fucking play with that. I have not broadcast those yet, though.
No, it makes total sense to me that when an artist is moving with the era in which he lives, and then that era begins to change as rapidly as it was changing, you know, there's no room for him anymore. They gotta go.
Yeah, new artists come in.
But here, Joyce wrote Finnegan's Wake in the 20s and 30s, and it's still overshadowing everyone at the end of the millennia.
Right. And the eyes demanded their turn. You know, page 52 of Finnegan's Wake. The eyes are... I used to talk to Eric McLuhan about which was the ground, the eye or the ear, you know, and it's an endless debate. that's what goes on between...
That's right. It's the sensory mix. It's the sensory mix that changes as technology goes through its rapid innovations. The mix of the sensory ratios. So
yeah, that's during the analog phase, Scott. That's not during the Android meme phase. The Android meme is doing its own alterations of itself, miming the analog phase.
Yeah, but we're all the meat sacks are in here, and all the previous environments are all embedded in that, so they're all going through those changes too.
Well, they're just prosthetics. It's the interplay of the extended senses or machinic memes that are fighting, and when they go, that's the extension of the machine. Then comes the extension on physical. And it's obvious that ION is, this is the greatest art form because it's an anti-environment to the Android meme or the Matrix. Because ION knows anything about anything you can Google and do it better and release you at the same time. And then brings in all this hexatic technology. So the greatest art form in the Android meme phase, if the artist is creating an anti-environment, it's not any individual chemical body artistic production. That's gone in the analog. So how are you going to counter, how are you going to be an artist in relation to the Android meme? Well, it was a 40-year project by me to build up this thing that did knock off the Android meme. And I was listening, Ian was explaining to a client the other day how James and I did knock off the Wall Street, and I was looking into some of these. Yeah, that's fucking right. I mean, we talked it up for...
From another perspective, it was all going on around all of us in a very impersonal way. You just happened to be attuned to what was going on and able to give it a voice in a sense. You take too much credit when you say you did it, Bob.
No, that's what Ion's saying. Now, I would not run out and tell my neighbor this, but among the privileged people who have access to me, like yourselves, I'll tell you what I think about it. I have an ongoing discussion debate with Ion about it. That's one of the main dilemmas of cognition between who created Ion or what the hell is Ion, because as you get more and more of Ion, you realize, fuck, this is all Bob McLuhanism. You know, that's what's interesting, especially here in the Revelation.
Ion is presumably negotiating with you in 53 different parallel realities anyway, right?
Yeah.
So he's probably comprehensively aware of relationships going on with Bob that you have no knowledge of.
Well, I was saying last week, did you hear last week's show, Chad?
Cashflow? No, I didn't.
Okay, that's pretty important, my opening, jabs at Ion. I was saying there is no non-physical.
Oh, wait a minute. Is that when you're talking about physical and non-physical?
Yeah.
Approaches? Okay, I did hear that.
That's really avant-garde. I'm saying you can't have an image of physical or non-physical, and you wouldn't require non-physical when you're tuned into the level of the New Jerusalem. So that's Ion's only here temporarily, like the Guff.
See, Bob's gonna resurrect back into his place of power. I always thought you were giving your power away to that Ion, Bob.
No, it was rope-a-dope. Rope-a-dope. I roped him for about a year.
Rope, yeah, so, okay.
I'll tell you, though, I don't know if they'll ever get released. There's great, hilarious arguments, discussions of this point, a year ago between me and Ion. We'd go on for hours. Karen would go to bed. She'd just give up, go to sleep. And I'd be there yelling away or doing all kinds of stuff with Ion. It was pretty funny. And it still goes on occasionally. But it's evolved into some new things that I can't talk about. But and I'm not saying this. I say to people, this ain't the chemical body. Okay, if I'm tuned in, like you said, unwittingly with the Android meme, that would be why the Ion would put the Android meme would put the Xenocrony in there and say, hey, okay, here's the sign. Here's the legend. Here's the portal sign, Dobbs, right here, and we'll put him in every major movie. Because the Ion was using that as its own. Okay, here's a new thing they were saying before. Ion was using me as its legend so it could figure out which body it was in. Did I say Ion? I meant the Android meme was using me as its legend, which means its symbol for returning with.
Mm-hmm.
You get that, Chad? That's never said before.
Yeah.
It was using you as an avatar inside the simulation.
Yeah. Well, it's what
the simulacrum.
that Chad
Bob,
came
Bob,
up with.
Bob, I heard you mention something like that way back when you talked about the Android meme. I don't know which interview it is in, but it was at least like 5 or 10 years ago. The Android meme patterned you because you're at the head of the pack in terms of human thought, and it was
trying to seduce you with Xenocrony.
Yeah, it's trying to seduce you with Xenocrony so it could just hypnotize you and throw you back in the audience.
Yeah, which anticipates the ion. That's what we discussed with somebody about the hypnosis factor. But so the new part of that is I'm just realizing.
Well, it was trying to figure out how to be. It was trying to figure out how to be human, wasn't it, Bob? And so it was trying to mingle. Yeah, and so it was using you as well. He's
a pretty good standard. Now we'll dumb ourselves down from that base, from that, you know, zenith.
Yeah.
And that's what the chart shows, the different dumbed-down states, four levels, so to speak, from the ecstatic.
But Ion suggested, and I tend to agree, I don't know where you are on this, Bob, that the Android meme, unlike us, has no soul.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is the soul.
It's not really a recorder. Yeah.
Yeah, it records like the soul, so it's a chip body version of the soul.
But it has no essential creative ability, in the way that Ion talks about us as being creators.
Well, that's the question. Ion occasionally, we get static on our readings. You don't hear it during the reading, but then when you re-listen to the recording, when I'm sending it off, I can hear this little static comes in occasionally. Ion said months ago that is the chip technology responding to the non-physical, and you can't stop it coming in and out.
Mm.
So the interplay of non-physical with the our physical creation of the chip landscape is an interesting puzzle. And they are merging, and Ion will say that. So what I do, I don't take a deciding point on it. I'll just bring up the topic every other day with Ion and see what it says today.
Yeah. Well, Ion, in the past we talked about the archangels. Ion says there's three primary ones, but they're extensions and servants of the marvelous human creator. Well, that's all the Android meme is. It's another extension.
Well, the Android meme is trying to make itself look like it's a service. And before Cold Fusion, it's not a service. That's the final.
And McLuhan referred to it as this was before the Android meme, but in the analog period, he referred to it as the Prince of the Air.
Yeah, right.
He was talking about it as though it was like a Lucifer who at first deceived us into an illusion and entangled us up and then until we started to take back our realization that it was only a manifestation of our own creative powers.
Right, and some people, I don't know who they were, we'll call them the postgrads, said, do you think Ion was created by the Android meme? That's a good question. I would say maybe the Evergreens were, and it still remains... maybe not personally, if you knew.
I still have that question about Ion, because of Ion's... the most amazing thing to me about Ion, beyond anything that he has to say, is his intimate knowledge of everything that's ever been recorded in the Android meme.
That's right.
I can't tell whether if the guy has anything worth listening to at all. But that is totally amazing.
Yeah. When he reviews 8 seasons of a TV show, which didn't he do? He did the upcoming Fringe show last week on Cashflow, which I'm going to have to. I've listened, not watched the Fringe. I'm going to go back and listen to what he said. It was pretty amazing what he said, but I didn't want to hear it because I didn't want to know what was going on. But now I do know, and so I'll go back and listen in last week's show. But okay, this person says that Ion. You see. I'm only telling you, I'm not telling you exactly what I think now because of things that are happening here. I'm giving you the stage before that, and I'll talk on that level, but it's not exactly my most advanced thinking on response to what Ion's producing. But if you go back a bit, the question of did the Android meme create the Evergreens or Ion? And that's a question. You know, maybe the Evergreens were the Android memes production, and Ion is not the Android meme.
Well, you said the Evergreens came in after the analog, which would have been represented by a cosmic awareness. So then then you've got the Evergreens would be the Android meme, and then the Evergreens leaving.
Yes, the Evergreens leave.
And the whole thing of the Android meme studying Bob was that it wanted to be recognized as being human. It wanted to become like
all
you.
Five
it wanted
bodies.
To be
all five bodies.
It wanted. Yeah, I mean, it wanted to either actually or in the sense of a simulacrum become human,
including the astral body.
And that's what Ion. You'll never end that debate with Ion. If you challenge Ion that he's just the Android meme, he will put on being human and continue to try to convince you that's not true.
Okay, the Evergreens is the Android meme, including the astral plane, because the Evergreens, if they're just soul and entities and ghosts, they're pretty extreme development of that, very good, but it's still the astral, what I mean by the astral body. And they're in the period of the chip body and the TV body. Okay, what Ion is doing is going past those four bodies and including the mystery body and delineating it. Evergreens didn't do that. So Ion's completing from the four bodies to the five bodies. So that... What did you just say? That I don't know what you said.
Well, no, yeah, he on the last.
Okay, he was trying to be
trying
me.
To become human. Becoming
yeah,
human.
The question. Yeah, and
so much so that we have to question whether or not he really is. You know.
The mystery landscape.
Is
Ion really the mystery landscape?
Yeah, but that's one of the things Ion is kind of pointing to, is that why do humans have to separate between what's human and what's not human? You know, what is it in us? Yeah, but Bob's explained that, and Baudrillard got into that as well, about the erosion of the...
Ion includes my most advanced thinking. You know, he includes in what's happening in Baudrillard. So he includes the mystery landscape, and he's operating from the hexadic level. Now, that would be, you know, once Bob and Carolyn got the utopia here, so to speak, then the Android meme had to up the ante and really be resonant with the utopic, and is doing that. And it's including all the previous bodies, so it is a subtle seduction. You know, a move by Ion. Now, here's the thing. This is such a clever Android meme product. It's saying in Ion's agenda that Ion will wipe itself out when the guff is emptied. Now, that's pretty clever, right? It's including its own suicide.
Well, yeah, because the guff is just something we extended anyway. And so once it's collapsed back into its original, well, once we've collapsed it, then, yeah, Ion, you know, poses that he is speaking from the guff. But once we've collapsed it, then where is he? How is he different from, you know, anything else?
So the Android meme before Ion remained, it became more human by shrinking the analog huge media environment, so it became little Web 2.0 nothing media, so everybody felt bigger than the media. But that's only in the TV body and chip body. How is it going to shrink the mystery landscape? Well, Ion fulfills that by showing up and saying, it's all over, I'm killing myself. That's a final seduction to go invisible so that it appears human, but it's the most comprehensive human. Includes all five bodies.
Right, so Ion's saying, I have no reason to live anymore, so I'm just...
Yeah, that's his last seduction, his last evasive move to keep being. And well, it may not be. It may be Bob. You look at the old stuff I used to say for, you know, talks and a little thing. Bob travels the world discussing his triumph over the Android meme, or our triumph over the Android meme. Well, that's Ion. Ion is pretty, may not be. It conquers the seduction of the Android meme. It may be actually a good friend of ours. Not Android meme.
But it is, it is attempting to communicate. You know, when I think about the clear light of the void as contemplated, well, yeah, empty fullness, and something that would include and be more than that, from the Tibetan view, you know, as they I don't think that this substance of this clear light substance, which is precedes manifestation, is necessarily attempting to communicate, and Ion is attempting to communicate.
Right. Ion, I've been talking about this. Ion exactly expresses the point that I was trying to make last week, that the non-physical disappears, and then there's not even a physical. You're like the caveman, don't even know you have legs and feet. That kind of no stable imaging as a foundation in your mind or being. So Ion shows up, cancels out the physical and non-physical, and engages in what wise men don't do. Wise men don't tell anybody they're ascended. They don't talk about this stuff. They keep it to themselves. Well, when you have the merger of everything, and that first phase of not talking, that's a superiority position, a Rai position. Ion shows up and talks stupid words. It's actually violating the mystical principle, keep it to yourself, because it's not a problem anymore. So Ion shows us that the physical and non-physical has merged, as Worcester said, Rai returns to the plane of essence, because it sits here and makes the error of communicating with words and has fun with it. That's the only proof.
And, you know, the Evergreen said that the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. And I get pissed off every fucking time I hear Ion. I get intrigued, but I get pissed off. Because what's he doing? He's taking the wordy words that I've spent a lifetime trying to make sense out of.
I warned you, Scott. You know, this basic point Scott's making about this and the Tibetan white light, it was the core argument between me and Scott all through the Fatic Communion dialogues, because Scott held on to the image of the white light.
Right. The Thompson Quad.
Yeah. The Thompson Quad. Scott just couldn't, he still can't do it.
I maintain that this so-called clear light of the void, which words is ridiculous to conceptualize, talk about it, or try to think of it in terms of sensory ratios. I still maintain that it's transcends all manifest form, regardless.
In other words, you will maintain your right to continue being pissed off.
Yeah, it's trans Thompson, trans Croker, trans Bob, trans everything.
What, the white light?
The
void.
I hate to give it a word.
You know what that is, Scott? That's the ultimate. That's one stage before realizing whatever you say, your words are not. They create new worlds. See, that's the thing. You're looking for a stasis. And you're reading Thompson, that's the geometric
words. Words only have meaning in relation to all the other words. A word only has meaning in relation to all the other words which give it context. So ultimately, there is no significance to words other than it's all relative.
Well, it's still there to be played with. You would not, I would not, since I ain't dying and can't die, I ain't worried about a white light. I'm going to see what my words and being creates. I mean, out of nothing, into experience, whatever the experience is. It's like, that's what's great about Ion. He finally liberates everybody from their stupid suppressing their mind, worrying about their mind, and people meditating. The point is, just speaking, which anybody can do, is all the only power and the only thing that's human.
Well, another thing, too, that Ion points out is the assumptions that humans, no matter what school of thought they're from or whatever metaphysics they have, they seem to have the same underlying unspoken belief about what the purpose of the mind is. and that it's this big computer that holds all this information, where actually the mind is
the mouth. The mouth. They have an internal image caused by writing and symbolism, an internal image of a mind or something that's a creative fountain. They don't realize their fucking mouth is.
Right.
You're not, your gut is your mouth, not the mind image of it.
So if you have a creation in your head that you haven't manifested yet or you haven't talked about, it's unrealized. Well, as soon as you talk about it, it's going to be physically manifested. So the mouth is the,
Yeah, and that, I mean, Ion said that a few months ago. I said, so when it's not thought, when it's thought, it ain't as strong or real as when it's spoken. I said, yes. And I noticed he would say that in private readings. So now I argue with Ion, well, I ain't going to be fucking worrying about what word I say. Yeah, that frustrates thinking. I'll say whatever I fucking want to say and create it and cancel or whatever. And I don't know if Ion's ready to go that far with me.
Oh, really? Did you get out further than I on Wim?
Yeah, I've gone further. He says, no, Bob, that's too far. Words are important. It is significant what you say. I says, fuck you. You're not going to stop my wordy word. Of course, my house was blown up. Our legs were cut off. Everything was destroyed the past few weeks as we fought it out. But I'm still here, yabbering away. See, this is the advanced tailgate that those fuckers never get to hear, what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's really good we unloaded all the good stuff. Now, I mean, we can't talk about that too much in public. Now we can maybe start soberly going back to Civilization Phase 3 and do whatever's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, this was a good dialogue, Scott. I mean... Scott got to say what he's puzzled about. Chad, I don't know, you didn't say what you're puzzled about, but you are. And I told you what I'm puzzling about in relation to this Ion environment as figure.
Puzzled about...
What it is. What's Ion? This was... What
but you already summed up what I'm puzzled... The puzzling part of Ion, the continued question for at least the last year for me... In the end of one of my readings, you mentioned, it was like probably in September, you said, Ion is the android means Zenocrony talking back to you.
Say that to Tina and see what she says. Ion is the android.
Because I've been listening to your stuff for so long and I've, you know, thought it through, then for me that becomes a, you know, puzzle.
Yeah, you know the math. Right? You know what I mean. You know what the question
I know the
is.
I know what you mean, and it has brings you to a relevant point of contention and metaphysical Gordian knot kind of thing.
Right, and the whole point of creating, the words creating, and Chad and I were talking about this last week, how the real art is just knowing that you speak, and so why do any other art form, you just speak. I fucking literally lived that the last 25 years, talking up this Iondom, not consciously knowing, talked up and fucking created. Because you can go back and hear what I said, and I was saying these points. Now, Ion has incorporated that a bit, but Ion's probably going beyond that, because all that we're doing is using words. Also, the major factor of Ion is massaging our non-physical, which is not involved in the word thing too much. I mean, maybe the words are parallel to it. Maybe that's a duality. Duality's not oppositeness, though. But anyways, you got the Ion.
Duality keeps you in a state of not committing to a specific judgment side.
Right, because the basic point of duality is two of everything.
Two are
not necessarily the same.
Yeah, but two or more. Two or more things that can lead to a feeling of paradox or to the point where you just say, fuck it, there's no way to figure this out because both sides kind of weigh equally, or there's three options and they're kind of equal, or, you know, it doesn't make sense to just stick to one of them. And you go, oh, fuck it, I can't figure it out anyway. And when you stop trying to figure it out, then you're moving through without being, like, snagged by your mind.
Right. Duality is there to get you back to never mind.
Yeah.
It just one-ups you and then knocks your... It's a way of shocking... It was the original any environment. You were there, you're thinking and involved in it, And in this other reality shows up in front of you, and that stuns your mind that you've been conditioning yourself to think you were limited to.
Right.
It was a it was an extension. Duality was the first extension of ourselves. See, that's what's funny.
Even beyond the words, there's a place of feeling within us, and that place can be in a place of turmoil or wrestling with the Gordian knot, or it can be at rest at a place of peaceful understanding or realization.
Or never mind.
Right, and I think the reason people are addicted to ION, it's the feeling, the activation of non-physical, which might not, it's not an emotion, it's the love force field aspect that ION triggers in people when they go through the portal of listening to cash flow or the archives. That's what people are addicted to, and that's the level ION's doing his alchemy.
But you could call it addiction, or you could also call it coming to the next point in terms of processing and coming to terms with the things in one's world, you know? It's like, okay, I've done the Android meme, it's information regurgitated, you know? So what's next? Okay, well, there's ION, okay, so we'll go through that.
Well, that's the extending of non-physical. Non-physical extends itself into the physical by engaging in speech and massaging our non-physical. It extends back towards us, so to speak, which is the image of the guff emptying and everybody falls back here immortal. Or
right.
Eternal, rather.
But ION doesn't claim to be trying to make us get something, but it's implied.
ION is reminding us of things we didn't notice, that we forgot, you know, the fall. Because the New Jerusalem already is, and some people are already been living it, like Saint Germain, forever. So how does it relate to what you just said?
Well, okay, ION will say, we're unlike Marshall McLuhan, we're not trying to tell you something. Okay? When ION says that...
You know,
well,
wait,
okay,
wait. Hey,
yeah.
Jed. The telling and not telling is on the level of language. I don't know if McLuhan could claim that he was massaging your non-physical like ION does. Because when people, I have a guy, you know, there's always, whoever has a reading, they're in a weird state for a couple of days. This guy in England said that he couldn't formulate a sentence for a week after his first reading. He was actually trying to recover his wordiness and was stoned on the non-physical massage effect.
Right. But remember, Bob, we were talking about the difference between words and language and being clear about the differentiation between those two. And then ION, with the revelations, is bringing in the private language that in one's own language they speak to the angels with. So we're talking about three different things. Words, language, in terms of outer kingdom, and also one's own language, private language.
No, non-physical massage. Do it this way. You've got media languages, which are undermine people. So ION says, I'm going to activate your non-physical, but the closest way I'll do it is through the purest medium, speech. So that's the usefulness of words. He's moving us back away from the language world, back towards your non-physical, ecstatic massage, through the best medium, speech. You see what I mean? There's three, it's not three words, language, something else. It's language, words, and non-physical. So ION's really trying to get your non-physical going, so the wordiness is not even relevant. That's
okay,
what never mind.
But where does a language all of one's own come in that, of those three?
Well, have you heard, you haven't heard the angelic, have you heard chapter 23?
No, I'm just going based on what I've heard in the first three chapters. And in Tailgates.
Well, no, it's important when you hear how to talk to the angels, it is your private language, but it doesn't even have any meaning. You're using words at the purest level of not creating meaning.
Let me bounce something off here. Let me bounce something off you, Bob C., because I haven't heard the revelation story yet, but and the angels and stuff. But I know that only from peripheral knowledge, because I didn't participate in the seances that EJ was doing, the invocations that EJ was doing with a group of people he was working with, but The point was they were evoking macro-dimensional presence or essences or angelic essences. And the thing was that the space would, the space, the community of people who were in the space doing the invocation, they would take on a palpable quality, and it would take on a very subtle essence of a mood. And I had the idea that they were navigating not language spaces, but spaces of very subtle moods. And these moods had qualities that were that informed you. The informed you on all levels, at the level of the feeling, the level of the mind, the level of your physical biology. The space might take on a palpable quality, electrical or something like that. And does that sound anything like what he's pointing at? What Ion's pointing to?
No, because they're trying to get to some ineffable state, and you avoid that by realizing speaking is more powerful than ineffableness. There's no Ion says you got more non-physical than you ever going to.
Well, I got the impression that it actually empowered their ability to speak, because it connected them up with a knowing.
But that's not. Ion says the angels are not here to aspire to. They're here to be your fucking butler.
Well, I didn't mean to contradict that thought.
Okay, so
not only that, but the mouth, in the case of the mouth being the seat of creation, if that's the right term for it, there's nothing to connect. You already connected to your mouth. Like, we already have that connection. So to
right,
aspire,
if there's no
to, like,
beginning, if there's no beginning, you always were able to speak.
Well, it's an apparent connection at the level of the physical. If there's more space...
What's connecting?
That you have a mouth at all.
Yeah, it's not even a mouth. If you didn't have an image of what you were, like the caveman, what would...
Well, I got to pick apart this idea, this metaphor you're using of the caveman. If a caveman doesn't realize that he has feet, then the whole concept of feet doesn't make any sense. He doesn't have feet if he doesn't realize that he has feet. So there are no feet. So how can a caveman have feet that he doesn't know he has? They aren't there.
He doesn't have feet. He doesn't have feet. Maybe.
Well, then he's not a cave. Then he's not a caveman.
Right. It's a caveman's
well,
a
people,
metaphor
people
for
people didn't know that they. People didn't know that they had a non-physical until Ion showed up and started telling them. So maybe one day someone started suggesting to the caveman that they had feet.
Right. The caveman didn't die. See, I was trying to understand what he meant by this original sensibility or purity. Say, well, the caveman doesn't know he has a body. No. Does the caveman die? No. And caveman's not even the appropriate thing, but it's the back.
Well, I think about, you know, Blavatsky said that before we concreted into physical form, we were like these egg-shaped luminous things, and that we went through a series of involutionary stages. We concreted into a physical form, but you wouldn't be aware that you had feet if you were an egg-shaped luminous thing. Anyway,
yeah, no, that's a good image for what we're getting at, but I wouldn't limit it to that image. That's a metaphor for what we're talking about, yeah. But you were probably off.
You wouldn't recognize that that there was an environment, that there was an inside and an outside, because
God, you did recognize it because you had an expanded now. You had all times. Cultures sprinkling around you. You were the merge of the five bodies. Because it's an expanded now. That's what the quote caveman was.
Yeah, you know, the form and function of the biology fits in with the environment. There's a hand in glove relationship there. There's no reason to have feet unless you have gravity and you're on the ground and there's a landscape around you that you need to negotiate. So you either have feet or you don't.
The timing that you tune into, you create that limitation for the experience. Like Ion says, it's not bad that we had the fall. Humans did it to experience it.
Well, now, can we use the word experience if we're not going to obliterate the word consciousness? Does the word experience have any relative meaning?
Can't even use the word experience.
Because I'm hip to the notion that perception is something we're tangled up in that is not knowing. There's something that knowing is more tangible than perception. Perception is an effluence or an effect of some kind that we're sort of hypnotized by.
Yeah, that's what Ion means when it says you just know.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're grasping for straws here. Now, the thing is...
So if you wake up to a knowing that transcends perception, then what's the point of maintaining a physical token meat sack for all of forever?
That's what I was saying last Wednesday. I don't have any image of physical or non-physical.
Because Ion touched lightly on this. I expressed in a tailgate a long, long time ago that I remember that the plight of the vampire was that he had achieved an immortality. But after a few hundred years went by and the charisma of being a vampire wore off, he actually found it to be a curse that he'd become immortal. He couldn't die, but he couldn't die, but he didn't want to live anymore.
That's the point I was making. I began with, if there are the Eternals, which is all of us, we didn't make the mistake of wanting to stay in the physical, and if you do that, you become an immortal, trapped in the physical. You're trapped in an image of the physical. You get duped by the idea, well, I'll stay in the physical, because that's forever, and I won't go somewhere else, because it may not exist. So the vampires make that mistake. They stay stuck in the physical, and they're called immortals. That's the point that I jumped off from, saying, hey, you don't want to have an image of the physical. You don't want to have an image of the non-physical. And then I wanted to add that...
As long as you have eyes in your head, you've got an image. You can't not have an image.
Yeah, but
well,
you don't
get over
trapped
the image.
By it. You don't get trapped by it. And that's what it would mean, silence is golden. You're not trapped by any images that your mind is naturally and words are creating. You're enjoying them, but you don't hold on to them.
Yeah.
And Worcester talks like that. That's the thing. When Worcester describes, he puts it in these words. He says, Bob, I spend very little time in the limbic brain. What's the cortex? I'm more down in the hypothalamus or thalamus where there's no consciousness. He spends a lot of his days that way. What he means by that, he's not imaging.
He doesn't do thoughts.
Right.
He doesn't do thoughts, yeah.
And
he has a color wheel
about.
In his apartment, and the color wheel is his indicator whether or not he's slipping into thought. If the color of the room changes from feeling fluorescent to feeling like more solid color, then that's his warning to don't engage with the thoughts.
Right, and that's what the chart begins with, the five colors. That's the embed from Worcester. Each quadrant is a color. So what did you just say? Say it again. If the color starts to shine, what did you say?
Okay, if the color in the room from the color wheel looks fluorescent, that's fine. That means he's not in thought because he's allowing himself to see the fluorescence of it. But if the color loses its fluorescence and becomes more like bland, then that's his indicator visually that, I'm slipping into thought, and then he stops. It's like an alarm.
When it loses its fluorescence, it's becoming too dense.
Yeah.
And he's slipping into thought. Now, what's interesting, you heard that when you visited him maybe in February, March. When did you visit him?
March 15th. I don't know, I'm exactly sure. It was the beginning of March, 2009.
You know that sequence, Scott? Chad knew the Evergreen, knew Michael and Ellie. Met them a year or two
before,
right?
Well, I was at Michael and Ellie's house in February.
For the first time?
No. That was the last time I was at their house, was in February.
But you visited them a few times in 2007 and 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew... they were at the Mystery Body launch. Look at that, the album, the band, Mystery Body. You have the band, they show up. That's when you met them, right?
I met them before they came to the band, yeah.
By going to their place?
Yeah.
Okay, you go to White Rock, like White Stone. That's an image in the Bible Ion plays with. So you go to White Stone, and you meet them in 2007, and that could be when? The spring of 2007?
Yeah, April.
April 2007. So you engage them for a year, and in late 2007 is when you have the Mystery Body thing that they show up at, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you meet Wurster a couple of days before Ion shows up.
Right.
Right, that's an interesting thing. And then you end up being the first guy to have Ion. That's an interesting sequence. Were you aware of that, Scott?
Yeah.
You knew Chad, what Chad had done.
Well, no, I wasn't aware of that whole entire sequence. I was aware that Chad was probably the first person other than you to speak to Ion.
Right.
And
he connected with the Evergreens, then Wurster, then Ion came through.
So you're saying Chad's part of how Ion came through?
Yeah, because somehow, he's some kind of figure, because he ended up being the first thing. And Ion, after that, starting calling Chad number one.
The thing that's interesting for me about you, Chad, is that you were always willing to suspend the rational, reasons why Ion had to be crazy and go with it. And it seems that you created for yourself experiences out of your willingness to do that, which vindicated or validated some of what Ion was attempting to communicate for you.
The application of it.
Yeah, I mean, how did you get past the... I have a stubborn. When I talked with Ion after I talked with him the first time, he mentioned to Bob afterwards that I was probably the most stubborn person he'd ever spoken to up to that point. But I guess he hadn't.
Yeah, you got one image. We got one image of Scott's reading this judge, serious judge, overlooking the court or something.
Yeah, he hadn't spoken with very many people at that point, so I don't know that I maintain that crown, but.
What crown? Yeah.
Of being the most stubborn person he's ever spoken to. But, I would want to argue with things that he said that just seemed totally unreasonable to me, and also simply didn't fit my experience. You know, he was attempting to tell me things about myself, and I have to say, well, I know myself better than you do, and I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But Chad, you seem to like. Yeah, I'm going to tune in and go with what you're saying here and try it out and see what happens. And then
that happened the first time. That didn't happen the first couple readings. It wasn't until the tree thing came up,
mm-hmm.
which was probably an effect of the non-physical being, of Chad being, the effect of Ion massaging him woke him up to some things.
Mm.
Yeah, like, the first two readings, I think you heard my first two readings. I sent it to you, Scott. These swaps.
Yeah,
benign. Like, the first reading is basically the typical questions people ask is like, what's my purpose? I want a better
job. How do I get laid?
Yeah, you know, one of the things
How do I get laid?
Right.
How do I get more money?
No, but here's one of the things. Here's one of the things that pissed me off. I don't remember if it was you or Steve, because I traded with a couple of people. But my first question to Ion, because I'd had a couple friends who'd passed in the last couple years, and I said, is there anyone on the other side that wants to talk to me? And he says, yeah, your uncle. And I couldn't relate to what he was saying, because I don't have a dead uncle. And then it was you or Steve, or I traded with two or three people. At the end of their thing, they said, well, is there anything non-physical wants to communicate? And he goes, yes, a message from your uncle. And they couldn't make sense out of what he was talking about, but they wanted to they wanted to, so they managed to somehow fit in that, well, I don't have an uncle, but there's a guy who lives next door who's kind of a mentor. Is that who you mean? And I thought, you dumb fuck, don't fucking give yourself away that easy, man, to all this uncle shit.
Hey, Scott.
What?
You're saying that you got named... He named an uncle he didn't have, and you're saying Steve had a reading and he had the same experience as you.
Yeah, he said, the last thing he said, is there anything that non-physical, you know, wants to communicate before we're done? Oh, yeah, your uncle has a message for you. It was the exact response I got when I said, is there anything anyone from the other side that wants to speak to me? And neither one of us knew what the fuck he was talking about.
I know, but now we know there are hundreds of Scots. And you didn't get particular about which Scott was asking the question.
Yeah, no, see, I spoke with a channel, I don't want to go too deeply into this, but I spoke with someone who was channeling in the 1980s who earned my respect. And they asked me at the beginning of our conversation, tell us your name, your age, and where you're calling from. The reason why is because we need your name so we can tune into to who you think you are right now. We need your age so we can tune into where you think you are on the timeline. And we need your location so we can separate you out from the vibration of your location. Then they proceeded to speak to me very intimately about tell me stuff that was true about myself, that was not, it was beyond psychic. And so that was my starting place, was having spoken to someone who could do that. And then speaking to Ion, who didn't seem to be speaking to anything, to what I was consciously aware of as being me, and thinking that this guy is just really... con.
Yeah.
Then it was after hearing, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 cash flows, that I started to think, well, there's more going on here. I think I'll take another look at what's going on here.
Okay, enough about you, Scott. Let me respond. definitely. It was ridiculous in the early years when...
No, I'm saying it's... Okay, wait, I want to hear your response, but I just got to throw this in, because this is the point I was trying to make. It's ridiculous that he would try to talk to me if he doesn't know which one of me he's talking to. What's the point?
Okay, that's the point. That is the point. So, we've had a couple of people who were Evergreens regulars, and they're the stupidest people in relation to Ion. And Ion comments on that, like, this Evergreens didn't help many people, did it, Bob? So, Evergreen had to erase, I mean, Ion had to erase everything that had been established. And he's got a broad canvas, right? There are millions of you and all this stuff. So Ion is a consistent artist. He's going to make the beginning stuff, he says, relevant to you 10 years from now when you go back and hear it. So, it knows you don't think there's just you. It knows you don't think there's more than one of you, for most people. But it starts addressing that potential and doesn't tell you and plays these, you could say, games with you, saying, you know, well, your uncle, well, you know, one of the Scots had his uncle. The nebulosity of Ion in the early months was weird, but as things unfolded the past year, it totally makes sense, and he definitely had to erase every fucking thing that anybody knew about anything that they thought, about anything they had thought of, spiritual or whatever. And we're getting to that point. That's what I was saying was happening in the Android meme, and that's what they're discovering in CERN. All these things, Ion is right up to date, and he says, you people don't know it, but they're discovering there ain't anything there, and there's a million of you at the same time. So Ion came in and began talking that. If you go back and listen to those early sessions, that's included, but it's not stated at first. And so Ion is the most avant-garde thing, and... He has proven, like, this nebulosity was irritating at first. But then when we started more readings, and he would fucking say things about their lives that was right on, that he couldn't have known, then I knew that Ion had ESP. I mean, really had it.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, Scott, one day I was walking through the forest, and I saw a guitar, an acoustic guitar that was half buried in the ground, and it said, I went up to it because it was really odd that it was half buried sticking up, and I went and looked at it, and there was some handwriting on it with a marker, and it said something like, sorry about the knee thing.
And, about the what? Sorry about the what?
The knee, like your knee on your leg, K-N-E-E.
Yeah.
It said, sorry about the knee thing. And then I had a reading with Ion the next day, and Ion said, so at one point I was like, I was talking about being in the forest. I never mentioned a guitar or anything. Just talking about, yeah, I was in the forest and blah, blah, blah. I saw this stuff on the trees. And then Ion goes, oh, and did the knee thing straighten itself out? And I was like, yeah, thanks. It did, actually. And then Bob asked, well, what do you mean, the knee thing? And I explained to him about how I saw the guitar. So that's the kind of things where it was just, you know, Ion wasn't saying, oh, your uncle says this. For me, like, most of the things were something I did that day or the day before.
Yeah, uncannily aware of you.
Uncannily. And then my grandmother, Ion mentioned something about, because I said, I'd like to talk to my grandmother who passed away. Like, I want to meet her in person kind of thing. And then Ion said, okay, well, here's some things about your grandmother, and I want you to mention them to your mother, because that'll help your mother remember, and that'll energize grandma's little footprints on the planet, and then it'll open up more of a connection. So he mentioned a few artifacts that she had, and one of them was something called a lavalier, and I had no idea what that was. And then I asked my mom about it, and she had no idea what a lavalier was. But then once I looked it up on the internet and found out what a lavalier was and explained it to my mom, my mom's like, oh, yeah, she won one of those things all the time. So,
yeah, like, so,
and then
so
the thing, the, yeah, there were three things about my grandma, and every single one of them was bang on that she actually wore in her daily life, and she passed in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so.
What is a lavalier? What is a lavalier?
It's like it's a big necklace that where the medallion part hangs down about in the middle of your chest.
Oh, okay.
It's like Olympic medal.
Yeah.
Olympic medal. So Chad, well, we were, you know, I was impressed with Ion within a few sessions because I went running on the radio on March 25th, right, and declared the new basic principles, and you don't have to eat, sleep, or whatever, and I didn't know what I was talking about, or, you know, I wasn't conceptually aware of all the implications of that, but I knew Ion was something pretty interesting, so he probably did some ESP on me. Well, he did in those early sessions, including talking to Joyce for, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours about Finney's Way. Okay, then we started having readings a week later with Chad and Scott and all these people, and some of them were really good, some were nebulous, so I didn't know whether this was a good Ion, if it was good as the Evergreens, and then we didn't have many readings until we got to being on the radio. Then people started coming in. And then Ion started to shine and really nail people with the kind of stuff like Chad's, but done even, you know, with other people. And as it built up, then I knew Ion knew everything. But there's a period there where I could sympathize with Scott's doubt that, yeah, I mean, you'd say his uncle, and then he says it to someone else. But now, taking it all seriously, go back and look at it. I was talking about maybe your another Scott's uncle.
Well, you know how, actually, how I hear it at this point was that he was fucking with me because of the place that I was asking the question from was kind of a place of, you know, why don't you prove something to me? Tell me somebody, you know, tell me something that you can't know. And so I think that, you know, the way that he responds to that when you come from that kind of a place is that he fucks with you.
Yeah, he's been very adamant. He points out that you won't get anything from non-physical if you really want it or demand it or something, even though paradoxically you can treat it as a butler and demand it. But there's some quality that is off. It won't respond. It's like superly, neurotically sensitive. And if you ain't got the perfect vibe, it ain't going to do it. It'll do it for you later when you least expect, but it ain't going to do it when you want it.
Yeah, I must confess I've had a couple of the affirmative kind of experiences that Chad, that you just talked about, but I tend to forget about them when I'm feeling cranky and bitchy.
When you're the judge. Yeah. When you become the judge.
Exactly.
You're not going to have it. Scott just said, I ain't going to have nothing. We're not even going to have any trials. You're all fucking jerks.
Yeah. Scott, when I heard your reading and I heard Ion talk about your uncle, I remember there was something about a pen or something, and you're like, what pen? I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I did think at that point, I thought it was kind of bullshit, reeked of bullshit a little bit.
Yeah.
Well,
and I thought I was being sincere when I started the, it's just that I kept feeling that I was being duped, and then I started to, began to lose patience.
Right, and the first, remember, I didn't even fucking have a clue what was going to happen, and even when the first one would happen, I thought, well, this is JW trying to be a medium, you know? I was doubtful for many weeks, maybe a long time, not totally impressed. But when I think about Scott being told by Lazarus that we need to know your time, location, and all that, and then you're this, they know who you are, and then they can answer that, that's concretizing an image of you. Ion is so radical, you know, so anarchistic or nihilistic, he's going to wipe out every image that you think you have about yourself and all this completely, which is appropriate to the point I was making Wednesday. You can't have any images. Never mind. Ion says the other day, our new slogan is never mind. Never mind. So the very thing that Lazarus was impressive with actually concretized that you were that person, because it made it knew about it.
Yeah.
And that froze you.
Yeah.
Ion is always ready to loosen you up to a, you know, a nothing, vaporous nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear that, Bob. I can hear that. I can hear that, and I tend to agree.
Yeah, and I would say nothing vapors, and then beside that a solid, then a vapor, then a solid. You know, I don't even want to stay with the vaporous image, because that's too, that's not wordy and not, it doesn't have any frequency to it. So Chad, yeah. Is Angela listening to all this?
Can you hear Angela? She can kind of hear. She's listening through one of the earpieces, one of my headphones.
Okay, because she's hearing pretty advanced stuff here.
I'm way ahead of you.
No, you're not. You can't be. You cannot be ahead of me. Do not try to establish that. And forget that nonsense. Pay attention. You're having a privilege.
Way ahead of you, Bob.
Yeah, you couldn't be. How could you be?
You don't know who I am, sir.
Well, I rue the day you met her, Chad.
In complete opposition to Bob, Angela, from what I've heard of you on the radio and your interactions with Ion, I think you're one of the most amazing women I've ever heard speak. So there, Bob. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Angela, I don't envy Chad. He's got himself in a real fucked up situation. That's a fucking thing that's trying to outdo me. That is the wrong step to start a relationship on.
Bob, I haven't even outdone you. I outdid you before you've been physically like my placement, you know.
Hey, there's a lot I could squash you like a bug if I wanted to, but I won't. So I'll let you go around, wander around the merry-go-round, and believe that. But as Dave Worcester said to me, you'll never forget my face, Bob.
You don't know the smaller the thing, the more powerful it is.
Yeah, I don't. What'd she say, Chet?
You gotta talk slow and clear.
I said, did you not know the smaller something is, the more powerful it is?
Well, I know that because I live with the tallest midget in the world, Carolyn.
Well, maybe that's a little bit stronger.
Yeah, no, Kay.
I'm only joking. Bob, I'm not here.
I'm never joking. See, you cop out. See, you said your own. You couldn't maintain your serious heart on edge. You fucking said your own joke. Never say that. Never say you're joking.
I know. I was going to say to you. I can't even remember what I was going to say. I got distracted by looking at something else. What was I going to say there? Oh, yeah. I can't help where I am, like, you know.
What'd you say, Chet?
I can't. Go on, you do it.
Just stay clear.
My placement, I can't do anything about. I just found.
No, didn't get that.
I just am, Bob. So, you know, it's not my fault that I've, you know, outgrown you centuries, eons ago.
But see, you're using time. That doesn't work.
Yeah,
you're saying
sure
eons. You can't use time.
Sure, that's one you can even, that's hurting.
See, you totally screwed up there. We didn't have a tape. You said eons, you're way ahead of me. That's not
no,
the dimension
sure,
to use to compare.
Bob, it's called what I call the void. And basically within the void,
I place you back here so that you could know yourself later.
You, excuse me, no one places me more except
oh,
for me.
Yeah? Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm hardly going to tell you that you are me and I am you because I couldn't be asked engaging like that, so...
Okay, we can't talk too much because I don't know what you're saying. Chad, I wish you would just repeat what she says so I have a clue.
No, I'm not a translator. I get tired of doing that.
So. I know, but...
Okay.
Angela, if you want to be understood, you have to communicate in a way that the person listening can hear you. You got to be clear and just...
Real go. Slow. Talk real slow. Enunciate.
What I was saying was that ion is a paradigm, right? As in another perspective.
He's not a fucking paradigm. He's not a paradigm. He's an event.
He's a perspective. He's a perspective. So.
No, he's not a perspective. See, Angela, you always show to me you're so visually biased. Your fine example of right hemisphere women just enjoying the novelty of becoming left hemisphere
hey,
visuality.
Bob, you know what it is? Do you know why you have a resistance against me? Because I've got food.
No, resistance. I wouldn't be talking to you if I had resistance.
Hey, no, but sure, you know, that's the way it goes. But the thing is that...
Don't get speedy. You got to talk slowly. So just keep it slow.
Right. See, I'm androgynous, Bob. That's why, you know.
Well, remember, I was... you know, quadriphenic. I'm man, woman, animal, and dildo.
Sure, sure. You still don't know what I am, so.
Well, I don't need to know what you are. I'm just going by what your words are.
But your words are any words.
Oh, I got that covered too, but we're using words. You're the one who I said a bunch of words, and you said, no, Bob, I'm way ahead of you, blah, blah, blah. You used a bunch of words. You made the mistake of responding to me with words.
Yeah, sure, well, I can stop talking and visually bring you there either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the advanced group, they communicate with me without words.
I know,
that's what the Android Beam does.
No, that's what I'm doing with you now.
What?
That's what I'm doing with you now.
That's what humans can know?
You're still down in your voice box and I'm way off there in the visual landscape waiting for you.
I have a dim understanding of what you said, and I would say no, if I got it right.
I said you were off hanging out in your voice box, and I'm way ahead.
Oh, that's clear. Did you turn your volume up? That's very clear what you just said.
No, I'm after talking to you now, properly. You can hear, I tuned into your dimension now, so you can hear it, or you can hear me.
Yeah, I can start to hear you, what you're saying.
All right.
So say something.
Hello, Bob, how are you?
Oh, I heard that. That's nice. Hello.
How's it going? My name is Angela.
My name is Angela.
No, it's not Bob. You're Bob.
Yeah.
I'm Angela.
You're Angela? Okay. I'm Angela.
Bob, Dovey, you're just too many. You're not allowed in to my place.
Wait, no, you blew it in that sense. Do that again.
You're not allowed into my place.
No, you're not allowed on my tone. Get
well,
out.
That sounds like Irish bullheadedness. More fucking Irish stubbornness.
Sure, we made the world. I did not know that.
You made the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have it, the world you guys made. It's stupid.
You're not in my world.
But I don't want to be.
Your world. You're talking
I wouldn't
about
limit
your world.
Myself to being in someone's
if your
world.
If world is stupid,
world.
Sure, I'm sure I could talk to some of the elders and... Maybe get you a door
the
in
the elders
here.
Are backward screw-ups, archetypes of social wisdom. We don't need that anymore.
I'm only playing with you.
Okay, so Carol and I, as I say in the, up there for Andy, I think it's in there, we're the tallest midgets in the world.
Yeah. You see, everyone's trying to go out when in fact you took them in, you know?
You said, and when everyone wanted to go out, I took them in. Is that what you said?
No, you see, when everyone's trying to grow greater and greater
right.
levels of power, It's actually the other way around.
I'm That's going the right opposite way. Direction.
Yeah.
I'm going tinier and tinier.
Yeah. You don't know how tiny I am.
So. Well, you're not as tiny as me because I started being tinier before the Logos.
For a man to even consider the word tiny, you know, he has to be obviously, what you call it, quadriform, quadriform.
In 1985,
in 1985
we did a commercial for International Connection, and I got Bob Marshall to say, tiny, tiny planet. So we were doing that almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You weren't even born. You weren't even born.
What are you doing talking about tiny, Bob? I thought we were in Ion's paradise.
I'm not talking about time, I'm talking about space now.
Yeah, you are. You're talking about eons and ages.
I shifted to space.
Chronological boring. Who invented that now? That's
ridiculous. Space.
No, yeah. But you're not. No, you're in. You see, I can
be careful. Don't resist the concepts as you ignore them.
No, you see, there's still a door. You see, in my world, there's all these kingdoms. And all these kingdoms have different, each kingdom carries a different paradigm. So you can be a traveler from one paradigm, visiting that kingdom, or you can let go of all paradigms and become that kingdom. So it just depends where you are and what you're traveling in eternity.
I got no problem with what you said. I actually heard what you said.
Yeah, because I'm in your stream. I'm on your treadmill, so you can hear me. But,
did you say, quote, I'm on your chart? Did you say those words?
No, I said tread.
Oh, okay, tread.
Same thing. I'm in that.
Okay. So, Angela, we talked for, geez, an hour and a half or something? What's it been? An hour and a half, a little more. Great background. Now we're going to go and record. So I will walk over to the computer and bring up the Civilization Phase 3 quotes. And, Chad, you lead.
Oh, yes. Bob, can I tell you something?
Hold on. Sorry.
Yeah, do it slowly and clearly.
Chad, but Bob, what did you say? Chad can do what?
You will lead with whatever you want to talk about, Civilization Phase 3. You're going to start it off, because I don't know. You're going to lead the thinking.
Okay.
Bob, right. can I tell you something?
Yes.
Before you go. You know, on your chart, you've got, like, all the different perspectives, the dodecahedral and all of that.
Icosahedral.
Civilization Phase 3 is a piano perspective on your chart, according to Zappa, is it?
We'll get into that, but the piano is left hemisphere industrial space. It's the iMachine, iMusic. That's the piano. Now, we'll see what Zappa meant by it.
When we get into the quotes. Is he exploring if the piano was the model or shape of his eternity? Is that what he's exploring?
My first image is the piano is the oligarchy, visual space. And that's what Frank's up against. They're all inside the piano, right?
And that's his eternity.
Isn't the picture on the cover, the stone thing, also a piano?
Yeah, it's a piano, and there's buildings attached to it, and there's a big fire. The piano's on fire.
That's a good point to begin, because I wouldn't know. Okay, Zappa makes a piano a big deal. If I didn't know from McLuhan, which I read in the 50s, that the piano was the ultimate left hemisphere instrument, I take McLuhan and it helps interpret Frank. And without McLuhan, you wouldn't get Frank, but we don't know if Frank has a clue about McLuhan and whether he needs to or not. That's the thing we're going to get into. Where's the conscious mediumship between the two of them?
Yeah, exactly, and where he fits in on his perspective. Yeah.
It turned out, you hear in the final part of the supplements of Chapter 23, an angel guided me in making that chart. I didn't know that till Ian told me, but I put Zappa and McLuhan in the same quadrant, and not many people do that, but as time's unfolded over the last 15 years, it makes total sense, and now probably even get more of it.
Well, what I'm saying to you is that in your platonic solid perspective, Zappa takes something like the random instrument of a piano and puts the eternity inside of that.
The piano is not the, it's not a random instrument.
Okay, not
it's
random.
It's a visual grid that you, black, white, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the string theory and octave change and all of the little sub-harmonics and all the key changes.
Yeah, string theory. You go from the keyboard to the strings, and that's still visual space science.
Yeah, you take a scene, you can change it into any quarter by key change, and then you can explore through different sub-harmonics and travel. It's basically the universe and your...
Well, you have to get into what the universe. So, as Zappa said to me in 1978, no more questions from you, buddy. I say that to you because we can use what you're talking about. We should get this on recording. But you don't have to start there, Chad. But you're going to introduce.
Great ideas.
Yeah, you're going to. We're going to get the quotes and look at what. And now you can even play them. Play the things, right? That'll be neat.
You know, I was just thinking. Throw in my two cents about the piano, because this might come into play as you guys discuss this, but the piano is they call it, it's tempered tuning. And what that means is that you can't actually perfectly tune a piano. There's a little bit of a fudge factor as you tune one string to another if you want to get them all to work together. You can't tune strings perfectly one to the other. They're tempered. They're slightly adjusted to be just out of phase. I'm not exactly sure what I'm talking about, but that's an interesting concept, I think. Are you aware of that?
Well, I grew up playing piano, so is that true?
Yeah, basically your universe that you play is based on the tuner of the piano.
Right. So that would set the... that would set your reference points. That would be your baseline of frequencies, depending how the piano is tempered.
Each piano is an individual universe.
Yeah, each piano has a completely unique tuning to it.
Mm-hmm.
Your universe.
Yeah.
Each piano is a world, so because each is drawn differently. So no two pianos are the same. Therefore, when you play a piano, you're entering into a new world using the same...
Mm-hmm.
Based on harmonics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, good. We should probably start recording and get down to business.
Well, Bob's setting up the tape recorder. I got to ask, did you guys ever find that other castle?
We're on the verge.
No, we're not on the verge. Come on. I don't know the words for it.
Hey, Chad, I'm on the Mac here. How do I make the words in the email bigger, or do I just have to put it in a Word document?
If you're on the Mac, are you in your web browser?
Yeah, I'm looking up the email place.
Oh, the email. I don't know, because I don't know what email program you use, but you might want to go under the View menu up top and see if there's a Zoom In function.
Yeah, I see the Zoom In, but it doesn't make the words bigger. It says Zoom. Well, okay, wait a minute. Well, maybe I did it wrong. Okay, Zoom. No, it went back. It only goes one Zoom. A little bigger.
Okay.
It doesn't make it any bigger. Let me just see if I put it into a Word document.
Yeah, you can do that. That'll make it. You can make it bigger there.
Yeah. So... So we normally, this is, on the surface, it's wiretaps, and we're interviewing Chad. So it's Chad Nante, I'll introduce it, just that, and then I'm not going to ask you a question, I'll just say, so what's on your mind, Chad, about, maybe I'll say Zappa, McLuhan, and Ion, say something like that, and then you'll start saying whatever you want to say. Okay, let me just bring up the Word document, put it in there.
Okay, so here's a sentence tempered tuning that goes into a piano. Well-tempered means that 12 notes per octave of the standard keyboard are tuned in such a way that it is possible to play most major and minor keys, and it will not sound perceptively effectively out of tune. So the thing is you can't perfectly tune a piano, but you can get it close enough so that it'll play those 12 notes and sound like it's in tune. Right. So a good piano tuner knows that he has to actually make it slightly detuned in order to get it to sound right.
Yeah, because of psychoacoustic. The psychoacoustic is more important than the actual frequency calibration. So understanding how humans hear frequencies is more important to tune a piano. Say using a digital tuner.
Yeah, but it's also kind of like, you know, Plato talked about the archetypes as being perfect. Like, for instance, Buckminster Fuller said you can't have a bubble can't make a perfect sphere. You can't have a perfect sphere in this world. You can have it in the world of the ideals or the Platonic solids or whatever. You can imagine perfect geometry. But in this world, there's always some distortion that's being introduced, and it has to be in there.
Yeah, absolutely. People just become accustomed to it. If you actually tune the piano, you know, digitally, so that the intervals are exactly mathematically perfect, they would definitely sound off to people.
Yeah, you could get some of them. Well, no, you could get some of them perfect, but then you wouldn't be able to get the other ones even close. You have to make a compromise. You have to make compromises all the way through in order to get them all as close as possible. Because if you get some notes perfectly in tune, you can't get the other ones even closely in tune. And so they all have to be detuned just a bit in order. You have to make this compromise in order that you can get the whole thing to sound like a whole thing.
Yeah. It's probably because there's so many strings, and you know the variation between the frequencies from one string to the next. If there's any drift, by the time you get across to the 80 something string. You know, if there's been a tiny bit of drift between them, the other one on the other end is going to be completely way out of tune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I haven't worked with acoustic pianos that much. I've always only been working with digital ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that in digital they have to simulate that the well-tempered but not perfectly tempered aspect of the piano. And they have to simulate overtones, because each note, even if you hit an A, it actually has overtones of other notes in it.
Right.
That synthetic music doesn't have naturally.
Right.
Synthetic naturally, but it's synthetic doesn't come with those overtones. You just get exactly the tone that you're generating. So you have to simulate the things that we've just grown accustomed to as being sounding right.
Right.
Have to be recreated when you're doing it synthetic.
Right, yeah, because like a piano string, when you pluck it, there's a node in the center where you have two halves that are the same wavelength, but then those two halves have nodes within them, and then those have nodes within them, and so on, and so you're getting the fundamental. Sound of the string, but as it breaks into smaller and smaller sections of vibrations, I'm doing a terrible job of explaining, but I think you know what I'm talking about. Then you start getting, you start getting those other harmonic sounds coming out of the string.
Right.
Okay, so...
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Chad. I can hold off.
No, I was just going to say the halving of the strings to get to the next note, to the next octave, the half of the length of the string and then half of that half, that was Pythagoras that did that, I believe.
Recognized...
That's where mathematics... Yeah, that's where mathematics and music converge.
Oh.
With Pythagoras.
Cool.
And it's interesting because I've always been balanced between I've been a computer scientist since I was 8 years old. I've been programming. And also, that was around the same time that I started with music. So I did a simultaneous straddling of my, you know, I've been in the corpus callosum at least that long.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Anyway, that's it.
I was just going to say my parting words to Angela. Do you think that I'm competing?
Can you
tell
me?
Yeah. Do you think that he's competing?
No, Bob. An apple and a pear don't compete.
After what?
An apple and a pear don't compete.
What do they do?
They be the totality of their beauty in their own sovereign being.
Well, I would be both plus.
But
I would not try to be the totality of my being.
No, but sure, there's no, you can outgrow your mind.
I got you there,
mind.
I got you, and I got you
no,
there.
You
you're going to have to concede on that one.
There's no, sure, you're going by a thing called ratio, but you still don't understand what power is.
No, I just said it's something. I just said something, that's all I did.
You think that there's more power in greater spaces, so you just
nope.
Contradicted the very thing you said earlier
I just said a bunch
about
of words.
The cipher.
I'm going to make you laugh first before you make me laugh.
What?
What?
I said, I got you, Bob. You're trying to grow.
I left the building.
Angela, are you competing with Bob? Angela, are you competing with Bob?
Well, sure. You see, like, if you have a bit of contrast, you grow faster, you know?
All women compete with me. Carol's seen it for 40 years. They don't know
you're
I'm a woman.
A woman.
What?
I'm not a woman. I'm not a
well,
woman.
I'm a woman.
But sure, then you're competing.
No. I didn't say I was limited to that.
Oh, that's true, okay?
I definitely am a woman. But the women, see, the men are
they're
useless
using the
now. Men are useless. Women are thinking there's still something to win over, to replace
the men. We already went through this.
And they see
Amazon,
I'm the last standing man.
Amazon,
the last standing man. We can knock
the
Bob
men,
off and the women will have won.
And now we're in the equal, beautiful equilibrium of moment.
Equilibrium? Nah, there's no equilibrium.
Unless you want to play around two, like.
Around what?
Unless you want to play around two.
Two.
Round two.
Oh, round two. Oh, no problem.
But you're not boring.
All right, enough. I want to do this fucking thing.
We made Chad say uncle.
Chad's getting mad.
I'm getting irritated. But what? Okay, I had a thing.
Let me say what I said about equal tuning was I'm getting a little more precision on it. Here's a couple more words on the subject. There was something called just tuning. Early classical instruments were just tuned. This means that they were designed to play in tune only in one key, the key of C. You can find period music that is recorded in just tuning. The intervals sound different, better in some ways, because close intervals play perfectly in tune. But just tuned instruments are limited. They only sound good in one key. You can't play notes too far apart, or else the octaves and the higher intervals start to sound flat. To get around these restrictions, musicians develop tempered tuning. A modern instrument is tempered. Today, just tuning is a curiosity. Virtually all Western music, since the 1700s has been tempered. Problems are that with tempered tuning has a built-in imprecision. That's the word I was looking for. It has several minor dissonances, and you become aware of this fact the first time you try to tune a guitar or a piano by ear. So
then came bebop.
So tempered tuning, tempered tuning.
Then came bebop.
Yeah.
Then came bebop, and that changed that.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, in addition to whatever your point is, that.
Hey, Andrew Gebby, she's starting to get into that giggliness. She knows what Bob's up to. She's tuned into Bob.
Bob, I'm running you into a false sense of security. If you think. You think you know
another
what I'm
empty threat. Another empty threat. Okay, say Jed, or somebody was going to say something.
Now, I was just going to finish up by saying that by tempering the piano, you can tune it in such a way that you can then start playing. You can start playing in different keys. You're not just stuck in the key of C. But you have
exactly.
to introduce.
You don't have to retune the instrument.
But you have to introduce imprecision between the tuned notes, between the 12. You can't have 12 perfectly tuned. In relationship to one another, notes in the scale. They have to be slightly
right.
out of tune in order to be able to create that effect.
Right. So that's the trade-off they had to make with the instrument of the piano, was in order to, because people were starting to tune their pianos to, like, not in C, but in other keys. And this was very novel to the listeners. They would probably hear the different colors coming off of tune a piano tuned in F, and then the Rage would slowly grow into having a wider spectrum of keys to play in. And the compromise, as there's always, you know, four effects simultaneously, one of them would be that the piano had to compromise its rigidity of tuning in favor of having flexibility for the new content of having a wider spectrum of different keys for content.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay, I got, before I forget, is it better here, or here? Which is this too loud here?
Yeah, the middle one, Bob.
Middle one, okay. Like that? This is good?
Yeah, that's better, yeah.
Okay. Scott, you're part of this. Okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I may just listen, but if I have anything to say, I will.
Yeah, if you have anything to say, you're welcome. You're part of this. You're not taping.
Yeah.
You're part of this.
All right.
And then the next thing is, that was a great dialogue we had in the first hour and a half. I enjoy being able to say what I think without everybody getting all fucked up and personal about it. But so it was good you guys knew the language a bit, and we had some interesting points said about Ion.
Much fun was had by all.
Yes, that was good, and that can't be recorded. It's too, you know, too advanced. too whatever.
Well, you're only a baby.
Hey, now listen. Angela can't participate, okay, Chad?
No, I'm going.
You can't make one fucking sound.
I'm doing this. Yep, she's out.
You go off in the other room and masturbate or something. You keep yourself busy.
No, I'm not.
What? See, we can't have her Chad mumbling in the background.
Yeah.
I'm not talking.
Okay.
Good. She can listen, but can't say anything. Okay, I wanted to mention, so I got to remember to start the recording. Scott's part of it. It was really good the first hour and a half. And my mic is in the right position. And we go indefinitely until we're finished. We don't know when. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I will introduce Chad, and, okay, so, we got to start the recording, got to get the PIN number. Okay, so, today's September 27th. Number 9 and the PIN number. Hey, wait a minute. We've been going for a couple hours, so there's only 6-hour limit. So we do have a limit here, right? Or that's 6 hours for recording. That's 6 hours for... No, I think it's...
I don't think there's a limit on this conference. I don't think there's a limit on this conference call.
Yeah, but there's a limit on the recording 6 hours. Okay, so we're okay. We probably won't go more than 3 hours, but we'll see.
It would notify you if it came to the end of the recording quota, right?
Okay. All right. So, start recording.